Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
MCH and MMH get antibody treatment. Medical Center Health System has received 60 doses of the monoclonal antibody treatment bamlanivimab. The doses were delivered last week by the Department of State Health Services. MCHS has developed a screening tool and referral process for patients to receive the treatment. It is to be used as an outpatient treatment for patients with mild to moderate COVID-19 symptoms and who are at high risk for progressing to severe symptoms or even hospitalization. The drugs will be administered at its infusion center and the emergency department. As of Wednesday, only one treatment has been administered. At this time, it's unclear when more doses of the treatment will be available and delivered to MCHS. Midland Health also issued a news release saying it is authorized to provide bamlanivimab. This is an experimental antibody treatment that could help prevent hospitalization in high-risk patients, the release said. Patients must meet criteria from each of the following areas. Patients must have a positive COVID test less than 72 hours old, and symptoms cannot have been present more than 4 days. Cannot be asymptomatic. Patients must also have one of the following: obesity with a body mass index of more than 35, chronic kidney disease, diabetes, immunosuppressive disease, or being receiving immunosuppressive treatments. Patients older than 65 qualify if they also have cardiovascular disease, hypertension, or a chronic respiratory disease such as COPD. This treatment is available to outpatients only. Hospitalized patients do not meet criteria. Also, patients who require increased oxygen support since being diagnosed with COVID-19 do not meet criteria, the release said. Obituaries and death notices for Friday, December 4th. Carolyn Sue McLarnon Kirby. Carolyn Sue Kirby, 85, of Odessa, passed away December 1st. Funeral services were held Friday, December 4th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home with Tanner House officiating. Burial followed at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Carolyn Sue Kirby was born in Mount Vernon, Ohio, to George and Eleanor McLarnon, February 9, 1935. She married Gene Kirby in 1953 in Dallas. Carolyn is preceded in death by her parents, George and Eleanor McLarnon, a son-in-law, Richard L. Seeberger, and a grandson. She is survived by her husband, Gene Kirby of Odessa, daughter Cheryl Seeberger Cavaney of Duncan, Oklahoma, daughter Karen and husband Roger Bell of Odessa, sister Linda Short of Mesa, Arizona, 4 grandchildren, 14 great-grandchildren, 4 nephews, and 1 niece. Memorials may be given to Westminster Presbyterian Church of Odessa and Redeemer Church of Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. James Hinesley. James Hinesley, 77, of Odessa, passed away Monday, November 30th. A memorial service was held Friday, December 4th at Emmanuel Baptist Church with Landon Coleman presiding. James was born January 17, 1943, in Brownwood to Richard and Bonnie Hinesley. He married Sandra Strickland, and they shared 59 years of marriage. James is survived by his wife, Sandra, a daughter, Kay Holman, and husband, Robert, 2 sons, Ron Hinesley and wife, Cheryl, and Mike Hinesley and wife, Vanice, and 6 grandchildren. He's also survived by his brother, Don Hinesley of Quitman, He was preceded in death by his parents and two sisters, Linda Simpson and Laura Poole. Damian Ray Gomez. Damian Gomez passed away November 26th in Medical Center Hospital's COVID ICU. Rosary will be prayed Monday, December 7th at 7 p.m. at Martinez Funeral Home, and Mass of Christian Burial will be officiated by Father Mark Woodruff at St. Elizabeth Seton in Odessa, Tuesday, December 8th at 10 a.m. In turn will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Masks and social distancing are required. Damian was born to Alvin Gomez and Martha Molina, October 4th, 1976. He was preceded in death by grandparents Francisco and Andrea Gomez and Jesus and Aloisa Molina, and two uncles. He is survived by his wife Deborah, daughter Alexis Jade, sons Donovan, Austin, and Jeffrey, his father Alvin and wife Rebecca Gomez, his mother Martha and husband Johnny Alvarado, his second mother Vicky Gomez, sister Michelle and husband Byron Rushall of Arlington, brother Fabian and wife Gracie Gomez of Odessa, and several nieces, nephews, stepdaughters Brianna and husband Jack Gonzalez and Brittany and husband Dustin Forehand, a stepson Brian and wife Lori Calderon, several stepbrothers and grandchildren, as well as uncles and cousins. Death notices. Francisco R. Aranivas. Francisco R. Aranivas, 50, of Odessa, died Thursday, November 26th. A funeral will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, December 10th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Burial will follow at the Odessa 2 section of Ector County Cemetery. Julian Madrid Campos, Jr. Julian Madrid Campos, Jr., 71, of Odessa, died Saturday, November 28th in Houston. A funeral service was held Friday, December 4th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial followed Saturday, December 5th at 2 p.m. at La Merced Cemetery in Marfa. Charles William Bill Hill. Charles William Bill Hill, 71, of Odessa, died Sunday, November 29th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Delia Lujan. Delia Lujan, 79, of Andrews, died Sunday, November 29th in Houston. Mass was celebrated December 4th at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Andrews, and burial followed at Andrews County Cemetery North. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Maria Christine Cadena Rios. Maria Christine Cadena Rios, 39, of Odessa, died Sunday, November 22nd. Mass was celebrated Friday, December 4th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church with Father Fernando Bonilla officiating. Arrangements by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Robin Dorothea Gardenheer Turnquist. Robin Dorothea Turnquist, 55, of Odessa, died Saturday, November 28th. A celebration of life was held December 3rd in Andrews. Arrangements are by Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. Michael Angel Banda. Michael Angel Banda, 54, of Andrews, died Sunday, November 29th in San Antonio. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. December 5th at American Heritage Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow immediately at American Heritage Cemetery, as Siquio Banda is officiating.
Hello, This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, November 29th, 2020. Opinion. Discrimination and prejudice. Some of the confusion in thinking about matters of race stems from the ambiguity in the terms that we use. I'm going to take a stab at suggesting operational definitions for a couple terms in our discussion of race. Good analytical thinking requires that we do not confuse one behavioral phenomenon with another. Let's start with discrimination. Discrimination is the act of choice, and choice is a necessary fact of life. Our lives are spent discriminating for or against different activities and people. Some people shop at Wegmans and thus discriminate against Food Giant. Some students discriminate against George Mason University in favor of attending Temple University. Many people racially discriminate by marrying within their own race rather than seeking partners of other races. People discriminate in many ways in forming contracts and other interrelationships. In each case, one person is benefited by discrimination and another is harmed or has reduced opportunities. What about prejudice? Prejudice is a useful term that is often misused. Its Latin root is prejudicium, meaning an opinion or judgment formed without due examination. Thus, we might define a prejudicial act as one where a decision is made on the basis of incomplete information. The decision maker might use stereotypes as a substitute for more complete information. We find that in a world of costly information, people seek to economize on information costs. Here is a simple yet intuitively appealing example. You are headed off to work. When you open your front door and step out, you are greeted by a full-grown tiger. The uninteresting prediction is that the average person would endeavor to leave the area in great dispatch. Why he would do so is more interesting. It is unlikely that the person's fear and decision to seek safety is based on any detailed information held about that particular tiger. More likely, his decision to seek safety is based on tiger folklore, what he has been told about tigers, or how he has seen other tigers behave. He prejudges that tiger. He makes his decision based on incomplete information. He uses tiger stereotypes. If a person did not prejudge that tiger, then he would endeavor to seek more information prior to his decision to run. He might attempt to pet the tiger, talk to him, and seek safety only if the tiger responded in a menacing fashion. The average person probably would not choose that strategy. He would surmise that the expected cost of getting more information about the tiger is greater than the expected benefit. He would probably conclude, "All I need to know is he's a tiger, and he's probably like the rest of them." By observing this person's behavior, there's no way one can say unambiguously whether the person likes or dislikes tigers. Similarly, the cheaply observed fact that an individual is short, an amputee, black, or a woman provides what some people deem sufficient information for decision-making or predicting the presence of some other attribute that's more costly to observe. For example, if asked to identify individuals with doctorate degrees in physics only by observing race and sex, most of us would assign a higher probability that white or Asian men would have such degrees than black men or women. Suppose you are a police chief and you're trying to find the culprits breaking into cars. Would you spend any of your resources investigating people in senior citizen homes? Using an observable attribute as a proxy for an unobservable or costly-to-observe attribute lies at the heart of decision theory. Lastly, is there a moral dimension to discrimination and prejudice? Should one be indifferent about whether he attends Temple University or George Mason University and thus makes his decision by flipping a coin? Is it more righteous to use the same technique when choosing to marry within or outside his race? Is it morally superior to be indifferent with respect to race in marriage, employment, and socializing? can one make a rigorous moral case for government coercion to determine whether one attends Temple University or George Mason University, marries outside of his race, or is indifferent about the racial characteristics of whom he employs? Walter Williams. Williams is an economics professor at George Mason University and is also a syndicated columnist.
Opinion. Texas view. Texas leaders should urge Paxton to step down. The point. Above all else, public servants should serve the public. No one can argue it serves the public interest for Attorney General Ken Paxton, still under indictment for an old scandal and now under FBI investigation for a new one, to remain the state's chief legal and law enforcement officer. His integrity is tattered. His credibility is shot. True to form, Paxton last week resolved to stay put and fight the allegations that he repeatedly misused his powerful office to help Austin real estate investor Nate Paul, a donor who gave $25,000 to Paxton's 2018 campaign. Paxton, who has firmly denied any wrongdoing, might prevail in the battle ahead, but the cloud of corruption over his agency does not serve the public, which relies on the Attorney General's office for legal opinions, help securing child support payments, and prosecution of white-collar crimes, similar to the ones that Paxton has been accused of committing. Paxton won't resign of his own accord. It is incumbent on other public servants, Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and other Republican leaders, to prevail on Paxton to step down for the good of Texas. So far, the most prominent official to make that call is U.S. Representative Chip Roy, a Republican from Hayes County and Paxton's former chief deputy, who publicly urged Paxton to resign when the latest scandal broke this fall. Roy rightly noted, "The Attorney General deserves his days in court, but the people of Texas deserve a fully functioning AG's office." We've disagreed with Roy on other issues, but his decision here to put state over party is commendable. Indeed, as a former colleague, Roy knows the credibility of the seven senior officials who went to the feds this fall to report serious allegations of misconduct against Paxton. This is no partisan witch hunt. These accusations come from some of Paxton's closest aides, people who share his political views but couldn't tolerate his abuse of his office. Those whistleblowers allege Paxton took several actions to benefit Paul, most notably appointing a special prosecutor to investigate the investigators who were going after the Austin-based investor. Paxton's senior staff found no good faith factual basis to challenge the FBI and other federal agencies who have been investigating Paul since 2019. But Paxton plowed ahead anyway, personally appointing a special prosecutor to do his donor's bidding. The whistleblowers also allege that Paxton pushed for a legal opinion to delay foreclosure auctions based on coronavirus crowd size limits. That opinion, rushed out on the first Sunday in August, landed 2 days before some of Paul's properties were posted for foreclosure. Meanwhile, in an unrelated case involving a nonprofit suing Paul over financial records, the Attorney General's office took the unusual step of intervening on Paul's behalf. All of this reeks of justice for hire, and the stench of scandal goes beyond Paxton's dealings with Paul. Back in April, for example, Paxton used the weight of his office to lean on officials in Gunnison County, Colorado, which promptly lifted its coronavirus-related ban on visitors, allowing wealthy Paxton donors to return to their vacation homes in the Rocky Mountains. Nor should we forget that Paxton still awaits trial on criminal charges of securities fraud related to investments he urged others to buy before he was elected Attorney General. While in office, Paxton has raked in tens of thousands of dollars for his legal defense fund, creating an irresistible opening for those who wish to curry favor with his powerful office. This editorial board called for Paxton's resignation in 2015 after his indictment was unsealed in the securities fraud case. We argued then that the business of the people of Texas should not be made to suffer while Paxton fights for his freedom and reputation in the courts. The picture has only worsened since then. The Attorney General now faces accusations of bribery and improper use of office that make securities fraud seem trivial in comparison. Seven of Paxton's senior officials put their jobs on the line to call out the misconduct they saw at the Attorney General's office. Our state's top elected officials must live up to their duty as public servants, too. Texans deserve an Attorney General's office that is effective and beyond reproach. Sadly, that is not what we have now. Abbott and Patrick have already said the latest allegations raise serious concerns. Now is the time for them to stand up for Texans and urge Paxton to step down. Austin American Statesman. Other voices. Letters to the editor. Masks are a civic duty. For someone who had never written a letter to the editor until the last few weeks, I guess I'm on a roll now. James LeBlanc's letter of November 22nd was full of more conspiracy theories than who shot JFK. Too many theories to even try to address. However, Mr. LeBlanc apparently feels it is his duty to provide a civics lesson without his understanding of the true definition of civics. Civics is a social science concerned with the rights and duties of a citizen. I submit that part of the duties of a citizen is the protection and preservation of the safety and well-being of fellow citizens. In the current pandemic, wearing a mask to protect your fellow citizen is your civic duty. This isn't Orwellian. It isn't pseudoscience. It is effective. It shows you cure. It is being a good citizen. It is your civic duty. Dan Hamilton, Odessa. Good riddance to Trump. When I think of all the problems this country has weathered recently, I'm weary but proud. I fail to understand why and how so many people continue to yearn for a leader who so obviously is so selfish and hateful that in a peak of jealousy and sour grapes is so clearly set to sabotage not only the economy, but Americans against Americans. Not only sabotaging the military, who he respects about as much as a little boy respects little green soldiers, but spreading yet more lies, thereby sabotaging our democracy itself. I've heard and even witnessed cult of personalities, but never so baffling a case, such as Trump supporters supporting a man with an actual vacuum of personality. Unless being a loud, arrogant, lying, racist braggart is having a personality. If I only had a daughter. Ha! The fact that he was voted in the first place shows we already had problems and were and are tired of the clone politicians that Washington has spewed for years, but Trump has served his purpose. For anyone who's read Stephen King's The Dead Zone, you'll understand. They have been put on notice. We elected someone different, gave him a chance, and watched him alienate the entire world against us. Allies and enemies alike think less of U.S. now. Instead of uniting, he finger-pointed and tweeted poison like a 13-year-old girl who's bitter about being replaced by a prettier girl before the election. 4 years of nonstop negativity and nonsense. He's gone so overboard with hate rhetoric, even on legitimate issues that need addressing, that the left is going to bend over backwards, giving the country away. For all those who swear that Trump is the economy's savior, he made a recent comment which plummeted the Dow. This man just doesn't care. How many of us need the stimulus package that he promised to do as soon as he won the election? He lost, so I guess he lost interest. Helping Americans, real Americans, doesn't interest him. Extortion doesn't work for most voters, as the election ended up showing $750 for a year of taxes from a millionaire big shot who has the effrontery to attack all immigrants as exploiting this country. Kind of ironic. Pulling out all the troops out of Terroristville, further weakening our global footprint, is the latest temper tantrum. I hope and pray he has enough common sense to put the country first, but I've seen nothing to set my mind at ease. Michael Yonke, Odessa. A national death wish? One dictionary definition of death wish is an unconscious desire for one's own death as manifested in self-destructive or dangerous behaviors. Based on what I see on the news these days, I think I cannot help but think that we have a national death wish. What else do you call it when we see so much destructive or dangerous behavior? What do you call it when the CDC advises people to stay home during the holidays, yet millions of people insist on traveling to visit relatives? What do you call it when people refuse to use proven means, masks and distance, to avoid the spread of the COVID virus? What do you call it when people even deny the existence of the virus? What do you call it when the president-elect is not allowed to get to work on plans for distribution of a vaccine, which will probably come very soon? I understand why Donald Trump is this way. That's who he is. But the millions of Americans who see what is happening in their hometowns, that I do not understand. It reminds me too much of Jonestown, Guyana, in 1978, where Jim Jones convinced over 900 people to drink the Kool-Aid, and they ended up dead. Aren't we more intelligent than that? Let's reject any form of national death wish by using our God-given intelligence. Joseph Icker, Odessa. A Reason to Give Thanks, by Chancellor Ted L. Mitchell, M.D., Chancellor of the Texas Tech University System, and previously the longest tenured president of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Also has been the president and CEO of the Cooper Clinic in Dallas. The holidays are upon us, and is customary, many of our friends, families, and loved ones will be joining together to celebrate the season. While this may seem an odd year and difficult time for gratitude, I believe there's no more important moment to pause and reflect on the many blessings around us, some of which have come into sharp relief in recent weeks and months. This year, I am particularly grateful for our frontline healthcare workers. There has been no group to sacrifice more in 2020. Few could have predicted the speed and scale of the global pandemic, but from the time it arrived until now, we have seen the near limitless capacity and extraordinary efforts of our nurses, doctors, healthcare administrators, and support staff. At every step, they have gone above and beyond, and time and again, they have put their patients' health and well-being ahead of their own. As not only a physician, but also a chancellor, I am extremely appreciative of the efforts by our Texas Tech University System family, especially within the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center and Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, El Paso. At the start, our faculty, staff, and students rushed in to do everything from develop new forms of personal protective equipment, PPE, to creating new kinds of viral transport media, VTM, so COVID-19 tests could move throughout the state. We had doctors and nurses take up residence in dorms, living away from their families and isolating themselves so they could serve their patients. And we did something that few thought would be possible, reopening our campus communities and resuming university life to the best and safest of our ability. As the fall semester comes to a close, I thank all in our campus communities for their adaptability, patience, and perseverance who made it possible. 8 months of unceasing work and effort has most certainly taken its toll, and some have made the ultimate sacrifice. One of note in our TTUHSC family being Dr. Juan Fitz, who passed away in early November from complications due to COVID-19. Dr. Fitz was an ER doctor with decades of serving patients, and in 2008, the American College of Emergency Physicians called him a hero of emergency medicine. He was a beloved figure, and we deeply mourn his passing, along with the passing of others in our extended family. Each of these losses worsens the widening cut to our core, and sadly, there are more to come. Our toughest challenges will arrive in the weeks and months ahead. More people are contracting the virus. Hospital systems have been stretched beyond their limits, and our ICUs are filling up with patients. While we have braced for this surge, it will test our communities, just as it has communities across the country and around the world. So if there's one thing we honor this year, I ask that it be the contributions of countless people in and around our community's healthcare systems. I'd also ask this of the Ram and Red Raider family, as well as all those in communities around our great state. In addition to your gratitude this holiday, practice an extra measure of caution. If we take COVID-19 precautions seriously, we lighten the load for our healthcare professionals. If we can stay healthy, keep socially distanced, and wear appropriate face coverings, we will be doing a small part to help those who have already done a great deal to help us. We have been in a constant state of readiness and vigilance these last 8 months, and I know how hard many of you have worked to make our achievements possible. I am encouraged by recent research and vaccine development, and I am confident the light at the end of the tunnel will grow brighter by the day. I hope the holiday offers some respite and we are able to enjoy it safely and wisely. The trials of this past year have taught us so much, and perhaps the foremost lesson is to have and express gratitude for all that is in our lives.
Environmental Protection Agency Protected Workers by Bonner R. Cohen. Democrats on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee recently took issue with the Environmental Protection Agency's decision to temporarily waive certain compliance requirements in light of the coronavirus outbreak. The Oversight Democrats joined a growing number of activists who have accused the EPA of using COVID-19 as an excuse to roll back environmental regulations and enable energy companies to pollute freely. These accusations missed the mark completely. When most non-essential workers stayed at home, energy firms couldn't meet every federal reporting requirement. The EPA's guidance allowed firms to scale back administrative work without incurring a fine. The policy didn't change federal environmental standards in the slightest. The EPA's memo helped energy firms protect workers during the outbreak. As with all industries, public officials required non-essential energy workers to stay home for a time to contain COVID-19. These new restrictions made it harder for energy firms to perform routine compliance monitoring and report results to the government. Rather than force these firms to choose between paying a hefty fine and putting workers at risk, the EPA granted them flexibility on these tasks. That doesn't mean energy firms had a free pass to pollute. The EPA made exceptions on a case-by-case basis, and only if the agency determined COVID-19 was at the root of a firm's noncompliance. The agency also explicitly stated that the guidance does not say that the COVID-19 pandemic will excuse exceedances of pollutant limitations. You have to search pretty hard to find a downside to the EPA's memo. environmentalists were up to the challenge. Bonner R. Cohen, Ph.D., is a senior fellow at the National Center for Public Policy Research, where he concentrates on energy, natural resources, and international relations. He also serves as a senior policy analyst for the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow and has testified before Congress a number of times. Guest Views. We have a lot of work left to do in 2020, by Senator John Cornyn. As we enter the last month of the year, it should be as clear to everyone in Washington as it is to those in Texas that there is a lot of work left to do in 2020. Our first priority needs to be the pandemic. Coronavirus relief is and needs to be at the top of the Senate's to-do list. The virus has claimed the lives of more than 20,000 Texans, and millions continue to grapple with the economic fallout. We're past due for additional relief to expand testing, protect students and teachers, support workers and small businesses, and move us even closer to the distribution of safe and effective vaccines. In short, it's imperative that Congress deliver additional COVID-19 relief to the American people. That work is critical, but we can't stop there. Our country still faces a host of challenges that existed long before the pandemic arrived and are sure to outlive this virus. The legislative process is a marathon, not a sprint, and countless bills to address some of these looming challenges are in their final stretch. If we work hard and work with the right priorities, we can get them across the finish line. Prior to COVID-19, one of the biggest health concerns for Texans was rising costs at the pharmacy. Since 2014, prescription drug prices have surged by 33%, more than any other medical goods or services. In some cases, these high costs can be attributed to new innovative drugs hitting the market for the first time, but too often, they're the result of drug manufacturers gaming the patent system by using hundreds of overlapping patents to stave off competition. As the profits of these companies increase, it's becoming more and more difficult for patients to afford the drugs they need to survive. For folks who have lost their jobs or health coverage during the pandemic, it can be impossible to afford. Last year, I introduced a bipartisan bill to stop this anti-competitive behavior. This legislation streamlines the process for resolving patent disputes so newer, competing products can come to market sooner. This bill received unanimous support from the Senate Judiciary Committee last summer and would be a win for every American who has felt the pain of sticker shock at the pharmacy. It's time to pass this legislation and get it to the president's desk to stop drug companies from taking advantage of Texans. From healthcare to the economy, the pandemic has impacted virtually every part of our lives. And sadly, it's having a devastating effect on instances of child sexual abuse. With many children isolating at home, out of sight from their teachers and other adults they would otherwise see on a routine basis, abuse is becoming more difficult to identify and report. To interrupt this cycle of abuse, the Senate unanimously passed bipartisan legislation I introduced, called the Jenna Quinn Law, which carries the name of an inspiring Texan who is a survivor of child sexual abuse. Jenna was the driving force behind a 2009 Texas law requiring training for teachers, caregivers, and other adults who work with children on how to prevent, recognize, and report child sexual abuse. The Jenna Quinn Law would finally back these training sessions with federal funding to help stop and prevent child sexual abuse nationwide. There's no reason for the House to ignore this legislation at such a critical time. This summer, the Senate passed legislation I introduced with Democrat Senator Dianne Feinstein to stop the online sale of e-cigarettes to children. We recently passed another bipartisan bill to ensure individuals transitioning from the criminal justice system have access to mental health resources. And just last week, the Senate passed legislation I introduced with Senator Kamala Harris to help state and local governments identify and process unidentified remains found along the U.S.-Mexico border and bring closure to the families of the deceased. Make no mistake, Congress needs to provide additional support for our ongoing battle against COVID-19, but we can't afford to miss this opportunity to make headway on other important priorities. We've got to address the problems that existed long before the pandemic and that will remain once it's gone. This has been a difficult and tumultuous year for our country, with division and disagreement often taking center stage. But we've made serious progress in the legislative marathon, much of it through bipartisan teamwork, and we've got to push top priorities across the finish line. Senator John Cornyn, a Republican from Texas, is a member of the Senate Finance, Intelligence, and Judiciary Committees. Senator John Cornyn.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, November 29th, 2020. Digestive Talk. Saying Happy Holidays to Your Gut by Dr. Rafael Samir Islam. Grew up in Odessa. He has completed both his medical degree and Master's of Business Association. www.samirislam.com. I love this time of the year. The lights, the decorations, the sounds of music, I love it all. And most importantly, I love the food. I am a sucker for turkey, peach cobbler, mashed potatoes, stuffing. It is all awesome. However, for a lot of my patients, the holidays are not so merry for their gastrointestinal tract. Here are a few suggestions for some of the more common complaints around the holidays. Above all, remember to talk to your physician before implementing any new recommendations. Gas and bloating. Some of the most common complaints around the holidays are problems with gas and bloating, which can be worsened by the types of foods eaten at this time of the year. Many of the sugary foods like cakes, cookies, and cobblers contain certain sugars and carbohydrates that are not easily absorbed in the gastrointestinal tract, making people feel bloated and miserable. Moderation is key in these situations. The holidays make us eat more than what we normally do, and our stomach is not used to this. Being moderate in your intake of food will make gas and bloating better. To help with that, try drinking more water to fill up your stomach. This will make you feel full quicker, thereby minimizing the amount of food in your stomach. Acid reflux. Reflux, regurgitation, and heartburn affect millions of people daily and tend to get worse around the holidays. Certain trigger foods such as spicy foods, tomato-based sauces, and carbonated drinks can worsen reflux symptoms. Avoid trigger foods you know will make your heartburn worse. Also, do not forget to take your normal reflux medications to minimize heartburn symptoms. Adding an over-the-counter antacid may help out as well. Constipation. Changes in your diet from the normal routine wreaks havoc on your colon. Even slight alterations from what you are used to eating and doing can make you more constipated. This can worsen during the holidays as we travel to visit family members or go out to eat. Foods rich in sugars and carbohydrates served during this season will worsen constipation, whereas foods high in fiber and vegetables will help move your bowels, so don't skip the salads or vegetables. Hot drinks or even going for a short walk outside will help move things along and make it easier. Additionally, when eating and enjoying holiday drinks and eggnog, we forget to drink enough water to keep ourselves hydrated, thereby worsening bowel problems. Try skipping out on the soda drinks and have some water instead. Reassuringly, most of these symptoms will get better on their own with simple diet changes. However, taking an over-the-counter fiber supplement might be the kick your colon needs to get better. If these remedies don't work, consider consulting your physician. So enjoy yourself during the holidays, but make sure to take care of your gastrointestinal tract as well. Start with Trust. Better Business Impact Report by Heather Massey, Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. Online retail has become more important than ever in the face of COVID-19. Online shopping has become a convenient way to shop while staying safe. A recent report from BBB examines the e-commerce industry and how small businesses can become a part of this trillion-dollar industry. The Better Business Impact Report offers advice to business owners looking to make the most of your online presence. Know the facts. Being aware of the facts can help entrepreneurs make informed decisions as they look to grow their business. For example, more than one-third of business owners believe they don't need a website, but nearly 2 billion purchased goods and services online in 2019. Listen to customers. Customer reviews are the best way to learn what your clients like or don't like about online retailers. 30% of online retail complaints allege orders were incorrect, and 50% claimed the item was late or never arrived. Meanwhile, a BBB analysis of 76,000 positive customer reviews and found that affordability, punctuality, friendliness, and communication are the top qualities for consumers when reviewing online businesses. Build trust. Trust is important to consumers, especially when shopping online. BBB outlines 6 standards of trust that can give your business a step ahead of the competition. These standards of trust also allow a business to become BBB accredited, the best way to show customers that you are a retailer that can be trusted. Online retailers can even use the BBB seal on their website once accredited. Use social media. Social media has become one of the most popular strategies for marketing a business. 53% of consumers said they're likely to buy from brands that are transparent on social media. Take time to increase your online presence and reach new customers. Visit BBB.org to read the full report and learn more ways to succeed as an online retailer. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. What's the optimal blood pressure level? Dear Dr. Roach, I would like your opinion about the need to lower blood pressure to the standard 120 over 80. I read the following in a scientific article. Quote, older people with pre-existing vascular disease or circulation deficits, however, often need higher systolic pressure, around 130 to 140 mmHg, to ensure adequate circulation to their brain and kidneys, end quote. Is this true? R.I. Answer. There remains debate about the optimal blood pressure goal in different patient populations. The theory had been that elevated blood pressure was essential to provide adequate blood flow to critical organs. The term essential high blood pressure is still in use, though we often forget the original meaning. However, recent studies, especially the SPRINT trial, have shown that lowering blood pressure below 120 over 80, even in older people with blockages in the arteries, was associated with less risk of heart attack, stroke, and death than a blood pressure of 140 over 90. Many experts have changed their practice to a more aggressive goal in high-risk patients. There are several caveats. One is that intensive blood pressure treatment often leads to more side effects, such as fainting and abnormalities in blood sodium levels. The second is that the blood pressure readings in the SPRINT test were obtained by automatic devices, and a manual blood pressure reading done in most offices is about 5 to 10 points lower on average than with the automated machine. Treating blood pressure to below 120 over 80 with a manual cuff could lead to even higher risk of adverse effects. Given those caveats, I try to bring blood pressure down to below 130 if the side effects from medicines are not too bad and the blood testing is okay. If a person's systolic blood pressure is between 120 and 130, I will not usually add additional medications.
Tension with sister's fiancé makes holiday outlook bleak. Dear Abby, for Friday, December 4th, 2020. Dear Abby, I woke up crying this morning. The holidays are fast approaching, and many of them I spent with my younger sister, Layla, and her family. It has been a tradition because our parents are no longer living, and my sisters live on the mainland. Layla's fiancé doesn't care for me, so last year's celebration wasn't very fun, although I did enjoy my family. Her fiancé and I never had an argument, nor have I ever said anything negative to him. He's insecure and wants Layla to himself. I was gone for the holidays in 2018 because I was caring for our elderly father. I hadn't been to their home for almost 2 years before that. During that time, he had my sister all to himself. The last time I visited, he wasn't very nice to me. It didn't feel good. Now, with this upcoming holiday season, I know I won't be invited to join them, which makes me sad and mad at the same time. My sister doesn't deal with life like I do. I'm very family-oriented, and I would never let a man come between us. It breaks my heart knowing I won't be a part of their lives this year for the holidays. I'm 65, and Layla is 61. We shouldn't be dealing with this kind of thing in our lives. What should I do? Sad Island Lady. Dear Sad, discuss this with Layla and find out whether you will be invited to visit this year. Many families are distancing, not because of personality conflicts, but because of COVID. It may be possible to see your sister via Zoom or outside her home if you arrange to stay elsewhere. If that isn't possible, make plans with friends and/or other relatives. Many people will be celebrating Christmas and New Year's differently this year. You will not be alone in that. Dear Abby, my 16-year-old son passed away unexpectedly a month ago. Because he was short for his age, he had been bullied during middle and high school. After a minor argument with my husband and me, he contacted a neighborhood kid who sold him powerful painkillers. This was, to my knowledge, the first time he did this, and I don't think he realized how devastating the effects could be. We had previously discussed the dangers of prescription drugs, but it seems this was an impulsive decision. My husband and 19-year-old daughter are reeling from this tragedy, and we're all in therapy now. I need to know if you have any advice on how to grieve. I'm feeling so lost and still in shock, and I have appreciated reading your advice over the years. Still in shock in Colorado. Dear Still, please accept my deepest sympathy for the tragic loss of your beloved son. The circumstances of his death make it even more difficult to understand and cope. Fortunately, there is help and support for families who have lost a sibling or a child. The Compassionate Friends is a group I have mentioned before in my column. Founded 50 years ago in England and incorporated in the United States in 1978, it exists to provide friendship, understanding, and hope to parents who are going through the natural grieving process. To find a chapter near you, contact them online at compassionatefriends.org or by calling 877-969-0010. Please don't wait.
Jackal and Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Sagittarius and a moon in Cancer until 7:53 a.m. when the moon enters Leo. Happy birthday for Friday, December 4, 2020. Gutsy, courageous, and energetic, you succeed this year by sacrificing your own comfort for what you believe. A project dear to your heart finally blossoms. The only warning for 2021 is not to favor your friends in business matters. If single, Do not let your objectivity become clouded with a certain individual. Wait and see. If attached, beware dalliances, and your partnership promises deep joy. Aquarius keeps you on your feet. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Today brings the hand of fate into play and will be friendly to making a heart connection. The matchmaking efforts of relatives help as well. Tonight, contact a longtime acquaintance who has been out of touch and get ready for a surprise. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Today is a wonderful day to cast out clutter and do a thorough clearing and cleaning. There will be some excitement and surprises. Welcome changes regarding work and creative projects. Others will be especially concerned and helpful. Tonight, you will be honored and appreciated. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Ideas suggested in casual conversation are worth examining. Read current magazines and newspapers. You are about to learn something valuable quite by accident. Impromptu journeys add dimension to your life. Tonight, shortcuts won't work out at all as expected. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Today finds you faced with some rigidity. Patiently play by the rules and make the most of the status quo. Hesitate if you're contemplating a work or residential move. Muster the confidence to try to boost your earnings. Tonight, you can do it. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. It's easy to express yourself now. Focus on image improvement. Celebrate today with some new wardrobe items. You will be able to accurately assess situations. Future travel would be very successful, so start planning now. Tonight, you feel a bit like a guardian angel. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Today probes the depths of your mysterious self. Suddenly, discretion is more important than usual. You'll cherish your privacy. Quiet, good deeds generate positive karma. You'll be aware of the secret needs and worries of others. Tonight, early bedtime for a good, long sleep. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. A new sense of direction and purpose develops. You accomplish much in record time. Accept invitations from friends or plan a get-together. You realize the blessings of friendship. You end the day in a nostalgic mood. Tonight, valuable online networking. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Your heart tells you to focus on home and family life, but another part of you wants to advance at work. Make time for both. If you host an online event, it will be a spectacular success. Tonight, career advancement, whatever you do. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Today indicates a special link to the long ago and far away. Regressive hypnosis, including past life study, can be an effective aid in spiritual awareness. Also, antiques and scrapbooks may have messages. Tonight, a recollection can play a part in spiritual awakening. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. A new relationship, job, or home can replace the familiar. Don't resist changes. After feeling unsettled, all will be well. It's time to grow is today's message. It's definitely time for a fresh start. Tonight, journal it all out to balance and ground yourself. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 2 stars. Your vitality will be up and down today. Be good to yourself. A relationship can be in a sluggish or uncertain phase. Make no demands. Be a true friend to the one you care for. Tonight, extra rest and a warm fire are essential. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 2 stars. Be alert to routine safety concerns. Create a comfortable environment. Some time and energy can be dedicated to the health needs of a loved one. Remember to take time to rest and regroup for your own recovery. Tonight, a long, soothing herbal soak. Born today, writer Rainer Maria Rilke, 1875, actor Jeff Bridges, 1979, actress Marissa Tomei, 1964.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.